You're listening to the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast hosted by Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, and Brad Tarver. Well, gentlemen, another week has passed. We inch ever closer to WWDC. And Jim, you have some news. You had a little mishap with your MacBook Pro this week. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I had a pretty rough Monday and Tuesday. I did rough travel day on Monday from Dallas to LaGuardia, and then all day work on Tuesday. And working back at the hotel club lounge Tuesday night, I knocked over a can of, it wasn't Sprite, it was like the Pepsi fake Sprite stuff, because all I have is Pepsi products. I had to put that in there. I knocked it over on the left side of my keyboard. I immediately got the drink off, and the laptop functionally, and I mean, it didn't like get wet on the main board or anything like that. The laptop still functions just fine. I'm recording on it as we speak. The problem is that several of the keys on the left side of the keyboard have developed a nice mush to them, including the keyboard, the left shift key, and the left command key, which are probably the three most important keys on the whole keyboard. Because when I shift, I generally use the left shift. When I command, I generally use the left shift. And of course, the spacebar is kind of important. So I brought it to the Apple store in Stamford, Connecticut on Wednesday morning. When they open, they're like, yeah, we can see you in about an hour. So I start walking back to the office because it's like two blocks from the office. I get about halfway back and I get the text message. We're ready for you now. I'm like, damn it, dude, I could have just stood there. So I turned back around and walked back there. I explain what happened and they're like, yeah, we'll see what we can do. And so I thought they would pop the keys off and clean it off. That's what I had asked him about. He comes back and he's like, no, we don't like to pop the keys off because this new one, you know, it's just, you know, we can, but, you know, it's troublesome. And, but we've got something where we can kind of stick up under there and kind of wipe it off a little bit. So to me, it's like they brought it into the back and they like sat there and drank coffee for 10 minutes and then they brought it back to me. And like, you know, maybe they took a can of air and sprayed on it or something, because I don't really know if they did a whole lot. I mean, they tried to act like they did. But as the week progressed, the keys are not sticking yet, but they are like there's no tactile feedback on the left shift key at all. You can hit it and it registers, but it doesn't feel like it moves at all. And I mean, if you've used one of the new MacBook Pros that was released late 2016, you know the keys don't move much even in their perfect state. So I'm
but they're definitely clacky and not mushy.
Correct. So I am very OCD about my keyboard. In fact, the keyboard is probably the thing I like least about this whole laptop. I thought it would eventually, I would come around to liking it just because I would get used to it. But I would rather have the keyboard that's on my iPad Pro like keyboard than this one on the MacBook Pro. The one on the iPad Pro, it feels great. This one just does not feel good at all, even before the mushiness. And I'm very OCD about that feedback. It just, you know, it bothers me. It literally like messes with my mind that the keyboard just doesn't feel correct as I'm working. And it makes it hard for me to focus. I it's just one of those things for me. So I'm going to do what I have to do. I ordered an iFixit toolkit, the big pro toolkit. And later today, I'm going to do surgery. I'm going to try to pop the keys off. There's a couple of YouTube videos there where people do it. Either I'm going to fix it and it's going to be okay, or I'm going to break it and just have to bring it into the Mac store, Apple store, and have them actually replace the top board or whatever they call it on here. Because I cannot use it in this current state. It drives me nuts. In fact, if I can't get it fixed, then I'm probably going to bring my little external Bluetooth Apple keyboard for work this week and just type on that at work, because I literally cannot focus as I'm trying to write stuff and type, and I hit one of those keys and I can't explain it how what it does to my mind, but it just completely throws me off. And Brian, you're kind of chuckling, but it's just that's me.
No, I'm agreeing with you that it would drive me nuts too. It's something I so couldn't abide that I wouldn't have left the Apple store. I would have insisted pop the keys and fix this, because I'm not leaving here until it's unequivocally fixed. It would have been my thing. I couldn't have done it any other way. I'm right there with you.
So today I'm either going to fix it or I'm going to make it worse. It's basically what I'm going to do. If I fix it, I'm good. If I make it worse, I'm bringing it into the Apple store. I do most of my work. Well, I do all of my work on this laptop, but I do it in a Windows virtual. So I'm going to just back up the virtual and then if I have to leave my Mac with them, then I can put this on my 13-inch that I still have, and I'll use that for work with the virtual, you know, every bit of my work stuff is contained within a Parallels Windows 10 VM. So I'm good there if I have to be without it for a week or however how long it takes. But either I'm going to fix it or I'm going to break it.
Have you looked at any of the teardowns on iFixit versus looking at YouTube?
I have. I've looked at both. There's definitely a method. I mean, you kind of pop them off gently from the top and kind of slide down. I'm a little worried about the bigger keys. Like most of the videos I see are individual, like G key or F key. I haven't seen anybody try to pop off a space key yet. And so that kind of worries me a little bit. But like I said, either I fix it or I'm going to make it worse and bring it in and have it fixed.
Well, whatever prying tools you get, you know, be it the guitar pick shaped one or a spudger or whatever, just be sure to use those guys. You know, don't try to wedge the edge of your thumb under something just because you think you can.
So let me ask you a quick question. Have you done a lot? I'm guessing probably not, but I do feel inclined to ask. Have you done a lot with repairing iPhones, taking them apart, messing with the things that, and the reason I ask, I know it's a completely different beast, but it requires, like when you're taking apart an iPhone and you're trying to disconnect that Touch ID sensor without pulling out that cable, like it's almost like defusing a bomb in some cases and having to do this. So I guess what I'm asking is, are you good at playing Operation when you were a kid?
It definitely takes a light touch. You have to, if you're going to pry something open with your hands, you have to sort of brace your hands in a way that you wouldn't pull too far and maybe possibly snap a cable.
So I have it on an iPhone or iPad. I've seen it done on those. With the 2 generation ago MacBook Pro, I did do a good bit of surgery on that one, replacing hard drives with SSDs, taking out the CD-ROM that was in that one and putting a second SSD with a caddy in there where you've got to pop some of the items off, replacing bigger batteries in those. But I know the scale is not exactly the same.
Those were also MacBook Pros that were actually designed for you to be able to do stuff to them. These are most assuredly not. Even looking at the keyboard, it's not like on old laptops where you could pop the keyboard as a separate, you could completely detach a keyboard and, you know, unplug the ribbon cable and take the keyboard away and go do stuff on it. It is a whole different beast on those new MacBook Pros. I mean, it is as close to being an appliance as you could possibly get. It's so, I don't blame them at the Apple store. Your first hint is when they didn't want to do it because it is very difficult to do. Getting those scissor mechanisms to line up, and you're not going to be able to see under there either, is going to be the other thing. It's going to make this like I've done stuff like this before, and even I would be like, screw this, I'm gonna punt to someone else, because I have a feeling it's going to be a big hassle in getting this thing to do right, and you're probably going to have to end up taking it in anyway. Just from, I don't know, maybe I'm a pessimist, but the way that Apple does the intricacy of these things, it's almost like...
You are a pessimist.
I am not a pessimist. I am the most optimistic person you'll ever meet.
He just has no confidence in me. That's what it is.
I'm a realist. No, it's not that. I've done this stuff before, and I know my own comfort level with it, and I still would be like, I'm probably going to screw it up. And if you haven't had to do anything on something that's fidgety, let's say, like operating on iPads and iPhones is a good example of something where it's so compact and it's so designed not to be taken apart. The iFixit scale that they have on their site for repairability is a good index of being able to say, is this going to be a cakewalk or is this going to suck?
Yeah, watch out for the ones that say difficult or involved, because they are going to be that. Exactly.
Look, I'm fully prepared for this. Like I said, I know I'm either going to fix it or I'm going to break it. And I know that break it is as likely as fix it. But it's got to be fixed, or this is a $3,000 brick to me, because I'm carrying a keyboard everywhere I go.
You should have just taken it there and said, change the keyboard, jerkwad, and I ain't leaving until you do it, and just do that, because it would have already been done by now.
Well, I was out of town, so they would have ended up having to ship back to me, but we'll see.
You could have just picked it up when you're in town.
I mean, so you think I should just pack it up this morning and bring it in instead of trying to do anything to it at all?
100%, I would absolutely recommend that, because again, with these scissor mechanisms, when I've had to do this with similar keys, the biggest challenge you're going to have is making that scissor mechanism, that butterfly mechanism, line up, and you're not going to be able to see under it is the problem. It's not like a keyboard, like, you know, on your desk where you pop a key, then you work it back on and press down one good time and it's there. This is making that stupid butterfly thing line up. Like you'd need one of those little mirrors that a dentist has to look at your teeth, to have somebody hold that.
But even smaller.
Yes, but even smaller than that. I don't know. I wouldn't do it just because I've been through this. My big fear in situations like this, and let me tell you this, Apple is a, they're not nice if you do stuff to your computer yourself and then want them to bail you out, says the guy who replaced a MacBook Air battery with an official MacBook Air battery, and they knew it, and they were like, we're not going to do anything. It's like, why not, right? You're not held liable for this. Just go ahead and, nope, won't touch it. So I ended up having to take it to a third-party guy, and it was just a whole thing. And in retrospect, I wish I just paid them to swap the battery out themselves, because when I made it worse, they would not make it better. So be careful. I mean, for a key on a keyboard, you may not end up in that situation, but you may not get a free repair in that situation.
Well, the problem here is it's not just one key. If it was one key, it'd be one thing, but it's like...
Or several keys.
The space, the command, the option. You know, it's like the from about the D row over to the left, including the space bar.
Yeah, I would just have them do it there themselves. Brad, have you ever had to do anything with the scissor style keys?
Fortunately, I haven't yet. And all of the MacBooks in our house, except for mine, are all the traditional chiclet keys. They don't have the new style scissor mechanism. And I haven't had anyone that, you know, through my professional work, bring me one that I've had to work on. But just looking at the drawings and the patent applications and all that stuff for these scissor keys, it's definitely not something that's for the easily daunted. Even though you may have an awesome new kit, and I'm not trying to tell you not to do it, Jim, you know, but you may create for yourself an afternoon of frustration, or you may learn something, you know, and I don't mean learn something like we told you so, but, you know, learn something about tearing down these new guys and you're like, oh, I figured out how to do it. And you get one right and you may get the rest of them right just because you figured out some trick to holding your head the right way and sticking the tweezers in there just right or something.
Y'all are making me nervous.
Good point on the patent thing too, because that was also something I looked at when I heard when the first MacBook came out, the new MacBooks in 2015, and people were complaining about the keyboards. That was something that I went and looked at before I would ever go into an Apple store and just try to type on one, because I wanted to see, like, what is it they're talking about? And then when I saw it, I'm like, oh, I've seen similar things to this. We have a little crisscrossing butterfly. Ugh, such a pain to, like, I've watched some of those videos on YouTube, and I don't know that I could do it, and I have a lot of experience doing that stuff.
It definitely makes you go back in your brain and sort of appreciate the old IBM style where it just had the closed cap, and you just snap that little key on there and you're ready to go.
Well, in a lot of ways, it's like a car, right? When I look at my old 86 Ford Ranger I had, you could pop the hood and you could change things and do things, and it was a lot easier. And now, you know, I got to plug into the data port and just get a diagnostic code. And then I got to, it's a whole thing. It's not as...
Well, I mean, right. And you can even compare it with even older cars than that. I mean, back before they even had computers in them, you know, you say, for example, you had a 55 Chevy Bel Air, you could take the whole motor out as long as you had a chain and something to lift the motor, and you needed like a crescent wrench and a screwdriver. And there's so little in there where, like, you didn't have the air conditioning compressor and all these other things. I mean, you could literally stand over in the engine bay and work on the motor. And, you know, now you definitely need some know-how and a computer or something to read those diag codes if you don't want to basically take it to someone, you know, if you're determined on working on it yourself, because cars definitely are now beyond just as simple as an oil change. Oil changes are easy, but the rest of it is a pain.
To me, Jim describing the changing out the CD and the other stuff and the battery and the other stuff, that is almost like standing in like the Bel Air or maybe an old Ford Fairlane or something compared to
your bins.
Yes, exactly. So just be advised.
So here's another question. I don't actually have Apple Care for this Mac. You think I should buy it before
You're still within I'm still under my first year. Regular warranty, you know, not the extended is what I mean, but I would not worry about it yet. Unless there's something that Apple Care Plus adds that the regular...
For the Mac, there's not an actual like accidental coverage like the phone is. So I was thinking I wouldn't buy it.
I guess I shouldn't call it Apple Care Plus. I mean, just Apple Care.
The fact that you've spent so much money on it and you're going to keep it for a long time, that's why I typically tend to get Apple Care on my Macs, just because if something... They're not designed in the way for you to get in them and do repair yourself. So I know a lot of the podcasts I listen to, people say, I've never had Apple Care on anything that I've own. It's like, well, good for you, Jim Diamond. But for the rest of us, if something goes wrong and you need to take it in, you're going to pay to get it fixed. So you either pay up front.
Well, using your whole realist type of outlook.
Or if you accidentally drop your phone 40 times before you're going to sell it to have it replaced.
using your realist outlook, things do break. Things do break down. I don't mean mechanically, but, you know, solder point could come loose or whatever, and you're not going to be able to go in there and do it. I mean, you could easily go in and replace a battery on the late 2016 MacBook Pro. But beyond that, I probably wouldn't crack it. I wouldn't try to, just because everything's permanent. You know, it's can't replace the storage, you can't replace the RAM, and they don't want you to.
It's like a stuff happens kind of thing.
People look at those as, oh, that's crap, don't ever get the warranty. But for this, you know, I've used AppleCare many, many times. I've had my, when I had my 2009 iMac, something went wrong with the hard drive, I think, in the first year. Of course, back it was when it still had a solid, you know, it didn't have an SSD.
A mechanical drive.
It had an actual mechanical drive. And, you know, I ended up using it on that. I've been lucky on this iMac that I haven't had to use it on, but I know on my MacBook Air, I ended up using it. I mean, it's, again, you're getting into components that are so tightly fused together, and it's so not fixable yourself. It's designed for you to not do it, that it seems like not a bad investment, because you're going to end up having to pay. But you're within your first year.
I mean, that's probably part of the reason why they glue the screen onto the iMac these days, where they, instead of making them to where they were just attached with magnets.
Well, yeah, but the other thing was, too, by closing that air gap, and, you know, you're getting a little bit of space back, and they can put more components in. I go round and round with a friend of mine who constantly curses Apple for doing this type of thing, but I kind of understand where they're coming from when space is at a premium and you need to squeeze every last bit of space into something. And you're doing this, again, like with a 2009 iMac, I took it apart with the suction cups and did the whole iFixit teardown and replaced the 1 terabyte hard drive with a 4 terabyte hard drive. It was great. And I couldn't do that on this one because it's fused together in such a way that I just wouldn't be able to. But I get it, right? I mean, it's, our cars are the same way. You know, it's, a lot of the stuff's not designed to be user serviceable. And that's understandable. But good luck with that. I would definitely just take it in, but that's just me. Because I know if I break it, I'm going to need their help anyway. And they may or may not want to help me at that point, but we'll see.
Take photos too while you're doing it, Jim.
Yes, definitely.
Either for documentation or for your own entertainment purposes.
Y'all have made me nervous enough now to where I'm going to see if I can get an appointment first.
No, you got to crack that thing open. You spent the money on that. I was just kidding. I was like, you paid for the little iFixit.
It's still in the shrink wrap. He can return it.
True. You're right.
I'm just saying, I've seen these things go bad. I've had to replace a screen in an older MacBook Pro, and I did that. I've had to use the little hot glue pad on the iPad to break the seal of the glue to crack the iPad open.
The one they don't sell in Mexico?
Right, exactly. Where you put it in the microwave, you get it hot, and you work it against the iPad until it breaks the bond. I've gone through some intricate iFixit teardowns on many devices, and I don't know. There's something about that butterfly keyboard just irritates. Hates the dickens out of me. I don't want to.
Well, it did before I even, like, before it even wasn't working right. And now it's like, just drives me nuts. I thought about bringing a keyboard and just leaving it at work, even now, just for, you know, when I'm on site Monday through Thursday, buying another whole separate keyboard.
Are you still working out of a conference room there at your client? Or are you?
No, I actually have a true cube now. We moved to a new office, and so I have my own space, yeah.
Dude, get a keyboard and whatever else and just attach in there, and then, I mean, you should do that anyway, regardless of how this shakes out, but if you have your own workspace, do they give you an external monitor to plug into as well?
Yeah, it's a piece of crap, but it's like a 14 by 40, like 21 inch, maybe 19, I don't know what size it is, but I mean, it's at least there.
Yeah, I would leave a complete workstation there and just plug in. That's just me, though. I know you got a Retina screen that's better than the monitor they're going to give you, so I can't fault you for that, but...
Yeah, I mean, I generally plug into that monitor, and I do most of my work on the Retina screen, but I keep, like, Outlook open and, you know, one or two other things open on the external, you know, in a different space, and so just do it that way.
Yeah, and if you have the external keyboard and you leave it there, I mean, that would keep you sort of impervious to this in the future, too, but I don't know. I'd probably try to get it fixed. Anywho, let's jump into to what's happened this week. So the first thing I want to talk about is Readle introduced a new drag and drop feature in all of their apps, which is really, really innovative. Have you guys, did you guys see this, the video on how it works?
I saw it, and my wife has a iPad Pro, and she uses both Spark and PDF Expert on her iPad. So I got in there and tried it out, and it was pretty neat.
Yeah, same here. I recently switched back to Spark for email, and I use PDF Expert quite a bit on my iPad doing expense reports and things like this, like that. And this will be super useful.
They are probably one of my favorite developers on iOS and the Mac. They do really, really good work. And Documents is a great app. If you ever wanted sort of a file browser inside of iOS, I highly recommend you take a look at Documents because it does a great job. And of course, their scanner, the
Scanner Pro.
Yeah, that's a nice app.
Yeah, I use that all the time for receipts and...
Again, expense reports. Yeah, yeah. Scanner Pro and PDF Expert is like my expense report workflow.
And I've been using Spark since it came out. And I have never looked back, never regretted it. Great, great thing. So do you guys know how they're accomplishing the drag and drop, just out of curiosity? Because I do.
No, I didn't read into that part.
They built a web server. And they're doing some sort of web request back and forth to themselves. That's why it only works with their apps. But they built like this entire little HTTP server running behind the scenes. And they're basically built a little subsystem in there. Actually, I'm kind of surprised that Apple even allows that.
I'm really surprised Apple allowed it. Yeah, I was about to say the same thing. I am shocked that Apple allowed them to include this functionality because...
Yeah, I'm surprised that it made it past the App Store review.
Because it's really not doing what you think it's doing. I mean, I wouldn't have guessed that way, Brian, but the fact that it does work that way, it's almost transparent to the user that you're moving this document up to them and then back down to the other app. It's like it's leaving your iPad instead of you just dragging and dropping, you know, from one app to the other. It's leaving your iPad or somehow, you know, doing that. So, I'm kind of surprised.
Well, I think the HTTP server is local on the in iOS. I think that's how they're pulling it off.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's just running as a local service in there on some arbitrary port.
So it doesn't transport it up and back down. Okay.
No, not up and back down, just still within the device itself. But still, that's one of, you never know how Apple's review process is going to work, what they'll give the benevolent thumbs up or thumbs down to, or just, you know, they're like the Emperor and Gladiator.
It's usually like a thumbs up for like 2 weeks until we decide we don't like it, and then we tell you to pull it.
What I suspect is going to happen is with iOS 11, we're going to see drag and drop between apps get implemented, and then it'll be a moot point and Apple won't care.
It'll get Sherlocked, yeah.
But I think they would be happy for it to be Sherlocked because then they don't have to maintain it.
Oh, I think so too. This is not a Sherlock for them. This is, we don't have to support this hack to make this work anymore.
Well, you know, if they pull something into their API that can do that, then you could have, obviously, any developer that makes more than one app for the iOS, they could drag between their apps or make it to where it's universal between, say, across developers, which would be great.
I mean, and I've seen instances like this.
Seems like that would kind of kill the share sheet, though, or kill some functionality of the share sheet.
The share sheet was a good thing for the time, but I think it would be okay for it to die. And again, you're going to have devices that don't support split screen. So the share sheet is still, you know, still fine. But if you have all that real estate of a 12.9-inch iPad Pro and you're doing split screen, it would be nice to be able to intuitively, you know, drag and drop stuff across.
Oh, definitely.
So even if it was an iPad Pro only feature, you know, all the better. It'd still be fine. It would reward those of us who buy the monstrous large iPad. So I'd be okay with that.
I've seen this on plenty of iPad iOS wish list. I mean, and you're talking about the share. I mean, there's still plenty of apps that I use that I try to use in split screen that don't work in split screen. And I'm like, why don't you work in split screen? Come on. This has been around for a long time. Please.
That is extremely frustrating. And what I dislike about that, some things that don't work in the 75-25 split screen will still sometimes work in the 50-50 split screen if you get it going right. So, but still frustrating.
How's that a thing? Like, how's that a thing? How does it work? Is it a different functionality? Like, they're like, our app is not made to run at 25%, so they just won't let it work. But at the half screen, it's actually the size of a regular iPad, right? And that kind of how the resolution goes?
Well, I think it depends on the way the UI is laid out. So to give you an example of something that I'll do, sometimes when I'm talking to you guys at night, I'll have 75% of my screen maybe reader, where I'm doing, reading something off Feedbin for my RSS feeds, and 25% of the screen will be Telegram. Well, the 25% is whatever my most recent conversation is. So I have to do a little, you know, slide back to get to the other conversations if I want to move around inside of it. The UI in Telegram is designed to be able to handle that. But if I go to like 50%, I think I get like the normal UI that I would expect, with a list of chat windows on one side and the most recent chat on the right. So I think it's just a matter of the developers not taking into account that having a very thin strip for their real estate. So not all of them do. But good on Riedel for doing the right thing, because this is just another example of some of the high quality stuff that they do. They just released an update to PDF Expert. Did you guys get in on that at the introductory pricing, the upgrade pricing?
I did.
Same here.
I'm not sure. I did. I'm not sure. I use the app on iOS, but I don't use the app on Mac. So,
and we have the family, the iCloud family set up. So, I had bought it way back when. At some point, my wife said that she needed something to do, needed something that PDF Expert offered. She didn't actually name PDF Expert, specifically, but I was able to, where you go in and you choose your another family member's purchases, and I was just pull it right down. So that's definitely another benefit of having the iCloud app sharing, or whatever you want to call it, iCloud family.
Yeah, so it looks like I'm on the whatever the latest is on iOS, but I've never bought it for Mac because I have a different PDF program that I've always used on Mac, and so I just never needed it.
Lame. I used to use PDF Pen, but I moved from that to this. And of course, the fact that I love, if something is available on iOS and Mac, I will use it on every platform that it's around. And I jumped on I don't use it on the Mac that often. I use it more on the iPad Pro, because if I have to sign a document or something like that, it's much easier to do it with the pencil on a iPad Pro than,
Yeah, I have PDF Pen Pro is the one I have from years ago that I got. It probably is some, buy these 8 pieces of software for $40 or some sort of package. And it still works for what I need to on Mac. So I've never bought the version for Mac OS.
PDF Expert is more intuitive, though, I've noticed. That was what got me to switch in the first place, even before I was a fan of Riedel.
Oh, I don't doubt it. PDF Pen Pro is confusing as hell at sometimes. So, no, I agree with you there.
It's the only program that I've used multiple times, and every time I use it, I feel like it's the first time that I've used it. Like, I have a signature that I keep as a JPEG, and I'll attach it to documents, and it's like, where is this? Oh, it has its own library independent of the file system that it stores this in, and I have to go, and it's never on the device that I'm using, and it's just a nightmare. So, PDF Expert, so much better. All right, moving along. There was also an article this week, a guy by the name of Joe Steele over at joesteele.com, who talked about his wish list for tvOS. Did you guys get a chance to see this?
I did. You told me to look at it right before we started, and I did.
So a lot of the things he hits on are really, really good points. Picture in picture. This is something that I'm surprised. We've had it on the iPad for at least, was it 9 or 10, I think? I thought it was 9 that we got the picture in picture on the iPad, though I may be mistaken. Not having that on the TV seems like, how do they not do this? So the new multitasking view, he has an idea about that seems pretty good. I don't mind the Rolodex card. The paradigm is very similar. What I really hate more than anything was if I had an app that got stuck or did something wrong, you could always press the TV button and get back to the main menu really quickly as a shortcut. And ever since they implemented the TV button to actually do something, you can't really do that easily anymore. It'll always take you into that app instead, which was annoying. They need
I changed that immediately. Like, you can go in the settings and change that back to its default previous functionality. And since I don't use the TV app as much, I turn that off and I just have it. It's like I got used to what that button does, so I switched it back to what that button does.
Since I use the TV app because Hulu's interface sucks, I actually do use that feature more often than not. Actually, I've started using it more and more anyway. Like, I always do a season pass for things like Better Call Saul. So on Tuesday mornings, when I know the previous night the episode is aired, I go to the TV app and just automatically, it already knows that I bought it and it already puts the latest one up there, and I just hit play and we're off to the races instead of having to go through iTunes and do it that way. But they should have made a dedicated home button on the remote, right? I mean, that would have, you have it on every other device, why not have that?
You got plenty of room on that remote for some more buttons.
I mean, you can just hold down the menu button and it will go to the home screen.
Oh, I did not know you could do a long press on the menu button. I'm ashamed to say that.
Long press on the menu button and it will go to home.
Yeah.
Huh. Learn something new every day.
This is the first time I've ever known something before Brian knew it.
I'm impressed. I'm walking away.
We need the iMessage confetti right now.
We really do. The laser show for that one, because that is impressive. I'm going to use that all the time now. So one of the things they also
take it off the wish list. Long press on menu button is already there.
Still, though, having to double tap the TV button to get into the process list, as it were, the visual representation of the Rolodex cards that you can swipe up and kill The YouTube app never refreshes for me. That's one of the things that's irritating to me, is if I go and I launch YouTube on Monday, let's say, and I don't look at it again until Thursday, when I go into it, it's still showing everything that it was showing on Monday. And if I go and I kill it and I go back into it, oh, surprise, surprise, there's new things there. I don't know why it has that behavior, but it's terrible.
My thing lately has been every Thursday when I get home from traveling, you know, I turn it on and I'm going to watch, usually it's...
Designated Survivor.
Right now it was Designated Survivor was what I was watching. I'd launch the Apple TV, you know, open up the Apple TV, and half the icons would be dark on my screen because they will have... like updated during the week while I was gone, but they never did fully come back to like not being dark, like shaded apps. And so I just have to reboot the Apple TV and everything's back to normal again. But it just, they would always update, but they would never get past the like the dark Netflix icon, dark Hulu icon. And I just want to throw in a little jab to completely agree with you that that new Hulu interface is
best case for the TV app ever.
Utter crap.
So yeah, there wasn't a lot there from the recommendations. I do like the dark mode. That's kind of a nice thing. And I enable that on every Apple TV that I set up.
Picture in picture, I can definitely see where that would be nice. You know, if you wanted to have like be watching one thing and have ESPN going on the side or weather on the side. Backup and restore. I think that's kind of a thing. That would be nice to be able to just have a default backup to iCloud like any other Apple device and let me restore it, you know, with all the apps that I have now. I have a bunch of apps now. Remember what apps I have and go ahead and install them all.
Well, I'll take it one step further there about the frustration. Now, I don't know if everyone is aware of this, but you know, when you're setting up an Apple TV, there's the point where you can put your phone on top of your Apple TV and it'll join your Wi-Fi network and do all that other stuff, which is really nice. I think they prompt you on screen, so it's probably not a big secret. That's nice. But you would think that iCloud Keychain would exist on the tvOS, kind of like it does on the Mac, where the most annoying part, the reason the backup would be helpful, but only if it was like an encrypted backup so that it stored your credentials, is having to re-enter all those credentials for all of those TV Anywhere apps. That is the worst. Having to go and re-authenticate all of those things is a nightmare. And I understand that TV providers don't want you cloning an image and sharing your credentials. Fine, whatever. But yeah, that's a big problem of if I wanted to wipe it and I'm having issues and I want to go back in, I've got to go and keep my phone handy and then go to each one of those providers and log in with a little goofy URL and put on the code that I get back. It's just the dumbest thing. We really need that single sign-on. Was the biggest promise that failed to deliver because the TV providers are horrible people.
I love that. TV providers are horrible people.
Maybe one day they can save up and buy some souls because they really are just ghouls.
They don't have to have customers, you know, they don't have to try to make your customers happy this is not the cable providers. At least they have to like CBS competes with ABC. So if the CBS app is really good and they have, you know, and they have to have better shows too, but you know, that's a thing. But when you talk about Comcast and Charter and whatnot, you know, they don't compete with one another. So
you are seeing traditional TV providers like DirecTV and Sling and all of those, but they're not used to really competing, I don't think. And I think that's the kicker. I think in time, this is a problem that is going to solve itself. I think this will get better. This has to be something. It's already on their radar for even having single sign-on in the first place. They just need to get...
With Agent Pi, it's all going to be one big company anyway, one day. They're just all going to join up. And there's going to be like one like national cable company. They're going to own all the providers and everything.
There pretty much already is at this point. But at least on the TV landscape, if you're a cord cutter, you do have competition that doesn't exist in the traditional cable landscape. So that's at least, you know, maybe that'll drive some innovation. Who knows? Moving right along. So let's talk about, there was an article this week that came out that's called A Year of Google Maps and Apple Maps. And boy, howdy, this was really good. Justin O'Byrne, I believe his name is. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. Did a
rattle.
Justin Bieber.
I can pronounce Riedel. The cartography comparison that he had done, I guess, a year ago, where he compared Apple Maps and Google Maps and just showed the iterations of how one had improved, guess which one, more than the other. So it wasn't actually as bad as you would think in some cases. So there was a lot of places where Apple had that they apparently made more changes on a monthly basis than Google did, I think was one of the takeaways of that. But it seems like Google's map is still sort of miles ahead. You know, one of the things that I wonder about truly is that it seems like Maps is tied heavily to the OS release. I know that's probably not the case. They're probably updating data all the time. But I really think that it's time to sort of divorce Maps from the OS releases so that more iteration is happening constantly with this, because it's, they got to quit playing catch up with this. I don't know if it's because they get the data from TomTom, if there's something else that they could be doing. I don't understand it. This seems like it's been solved by other companies. I don't know why it seems so hard for Apple to do this.
Well, didn't Apple have their, they actually had cars going around doing their own thing, like the Google taking pictures. I mean, Apple was trying to do their own map stuff, right? I mean, I don't understand that either, because it seems to me like an app like those would get better the more people use it. I don't use Apple Maps, and I know neither one of y'all use a whole lot of Apple Maps. But a lot of people just use whatever the default apps are on their phone. They never go get Google, or they never go get Waze. So there are people using Apple Maps, and there's a lot of people with iPhones. So this should be getting better, I would think.
So you don't use Apple Maps at all?
I use Apple Maps if I need to do walking directions or biking directions sometimes, if I'm biking somewhere and I want to do that. I prefer Google for the biking stuff, really. I use Waze or Google Maps generally. I use Waze in areas that I know, like at home or St. Louis. And I use Google Maps when I'm someplace that I don't know where I'm going, because it just seems to work better. It prompts me a little bit sooner. The directions are a little bit more detailed on Google than Waze, as far as, you know, be in this lane to turn here or whatever. So that's kind of my use cases. If I'm in a city, I generally know. I've been in St. Louis enough to where I kind of know my way around, or home here in Dallas or Mississippi. It's Waze. Otherwise, I use Google.
Just for grins and giggles, I started using Apple Maps a little bit this week. My commute to work is very, very short. It's probably 3 or 4 miles. It's not very far. But just for, you know, if I'm going to the gym or something where I don't need the actual directions, I know generally which way is the fastest. But I'll throw the map up there on the screen and do the ETA and everything else just to see. They started putting like delays in traffic and alternate routes and things that pop up that they used to not do. So it's, I don't know, I can see slowdowns and other things that used to I could only get out of Google Maps or Waze. So in about a week or so, when I head to Mississippi, I'm going to go, and you guys remember I bought a dedicated Android tablet a few months ago for Waze.
Right.
So I'm going to have Apple Maps versus Waze. I'm going to do Apple Maps on CarPlay on that display, and I'm going to have my 7-inch tablet that's next to it that's going to be doing Waze, just to sort of see, again, from a slowdown of traffic perspective, you know, alternate routes that get proposed. You would think, oh, that's probably not going to, there's not probably going to be a lot. I know every year when I go to Kentucky, especially in the summer when there's accidents and other things, oh, there's lots of things that pop up on that 5-hour drive that, you know, route me around. I don't expect that it will do as good as Waze, and I'm probably going to trust Waze more than I trust Apple Maps, but I am going to have them both going just to see. I also do have a spare Android phone where I could put Google Maps in the mix and do Android Auto and make Google Maps versus Waze, but, you know, I would expect that to be less of a deviation, even though I understand they keep the data separate. So, you know, you'll bring in, they'll have accident information that gets put into Google Maps that comes from Waze, but they are still separate sort of entities. So they don't always say go the same direction, which is kind of an interesting thought to me.
Yeah, they definitely don't. I've tried that before. They definitely. One of the other things you mentioned, like just punching in, I'll generally put directions into Waze no matter where I'm going, especially here in Dallas, just because of traffic issues. Because Dallas is such that it's a really big city. And so there's like 6 ways to get a lot of places. I mean, you know, there really is. I compare to like Austin, where there's like 2 main roads and you're going to be on one of those roads to get just about anywhere. Dallas is just so big that there are a bunch of ways to get a lot of places. So I put in directions for places that I go all the time, just because there could be a big difference in how long something takes based on traffic patterns or wrecks or whatever. So I'll put it in almost anytime I go anywhere, and I'll turn it back off, you know, after I see which way it says to go. But I check just because it's easy, and you know, we have that option here in Dallas.
So I'm going to do the counter argument to Waze for just a moment, even though I love Waze, and I think Brad and I harassed you until you started using it.
I've been using Waze for years.
What sort of revisionist history is this, Brad? Back me up.
Yeah, I think he's living in a different reality.
I remember using Waze in Atlanta. I don't even know how many years ago it was, when it was so new that it was trying to tell me to get off the interstate on the roads that went under the interstate. Or I remember turning in a map fix going up Highway 49 from Biloxi to Jackson, where it didn't know Highway 49 existed from Collins to Jackson, Mississippi.
I'm going to go dig up old episodes of the podcast where Jim's like, I don't use Waze, I use Google Maps.
Now, I switch back and forth, but I've been a Waze user for a long time. It's always been on my phone. I do switch back and forth For a while there, I didn't like the Waze interface because they didn't update to the higher DPI screens and things like that. And so I switched to Google Maps for a while. But I've been a Waze user for a long time.
So my wife, I get to use Waze, and she's not a big fan. Her commute is into also a large city. She goes down, she works in downtown Atlanta from the suburbs. And I get probably two or three times a week, stupid Waze. It told me to go away, and it was like saying my time was going to be 30 minutes, and now it's saying 48 minutes. And it immediately jumped as soon as I got off on the road that it told me to get off on. Honestly, though, it's the data is coming in real time. And if something happens, I mean, you run the risk of that. She complains an inordinate amount of time about that sort of thing where it seems to let her down more often than not, she says. Even though I don't know if there's exactly a quick way for her to ever go to work because the traffic is continuously terrible in every direction.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I think it just Atlanta traffic lets her down all the time.
My wife prefers Waze for one reason, because of the way it highlights the roads. She has a 2016 Honda Pilot, and the nav in it is Garmin-based. And the way Garmin paints the road is this wide pink stripe that's your route over, and it's wider than the road itself that was originally there before you set your route. So sometimes if you come to a place where you might need to bear left or bear right, but it's not necessarily telling you which way to go, and it kind of confuses her. On the Garmin, there's a little icon in the top left that will show you, say you have four lanes and two lanes go the way you want and the two lanes go straight ahead. It will show you these things, but she didn't always think to look at that. She's looking at her highlighted route. The other thing that was funny was we live about 8 miles outside of Jackson, Mississippi, but she has to drive through Jackson to get to the hospital where she works. And the roads are just awful in Jackson. I don't know if I can equate that to Hinds County or just...
Both equally have terrible roads.
Jackson proper, you know, the city of Jackson proper itself, but...
Oh, and they're awful. Yeah, God.
They're horrible. Anyway, she... In all the time that she's been using Waze, she's never had it prompt her to warn her about a pothole in the road, even though that is an option in Waze. So it said, you know, there's a pothole ahead in the road, and it counts down to it, 0.4 mile, 0.3 mile. And she texted me once she got to work and said, so this morning Waze prompted me about a pothole in the road. I said, yeah, what about it? That's been there for a while. And she says, well, Waze is going to be really busy if people start reporting this all the time, because there's nothing but potholes in Jackson.
Which, for anybody listening who's not from there, that might seem like an exaggeration. No, their roads are about 75% potholes.
I actually tweeted about this last time I was in Mississippi. I wanted to be able to turn off. There is a car
on the shoulder,
stalled,
yes,
on the side of the road or whatever, on the shoulder while I was in Mississippi, because that's all it does. Is it's like every 2 minutes, there's a car stalled. There's a car on the shoulder. There's a car. Like, it's every 2 minutes, no matter where you're going in South Mississippi, there's a car on the side of the road.
Every morning we're on the way to, I mean, my son's out of school now, but every morning on the way to school, it will tell me there's at least three cars on the side of the road. And it's a 20-mile commute one way. The next day it'll prompt again. It'll be three or four different cars. You know, they will have the city or whatever will have already towed away those other cars, or someone has come along and fixed them. And then there will be three or four new cars. So, I mean, it's definitely a problem around here where people just leave their car behind.
Yeah, I just wanted to be able to turn off that one prompt. Just, I like the other prompts, but let me just turn off there's a car on the shoulder, because literally in South Mississippi, there's a lot of cars on the shoulder. It's just, it's one of those like crying wolf kind of things. There's just too damn many of them where you ignore it.
It's not just South Mississippi. When I drive anywhere for long periods of time, this is something that just worries you to death. They have if you search for the requests, I guess, for feature enhancements and things for Waze, I think they have some on a forum. By far, that is one that people want to be able. I don't mind getting a visual prompt on the screen. That's fine. But to interrupt audio and tell you that, it's like anything else. If you get an alert for something, you know, we used to talk about this in the enterprise IT world. If you're doing monitoring at all, if you get an event and it happens over and over and over, and it's not an actionable event, at some point it becomes an ignored event, right? If you're alerting me something that requires no action on my part and there's nothing I can do and it's happening literally all the time, then you might as well never alert on it at all, because it has no value. It is the definition of crying wolf. So yeah, I'm sympathetic to that, but I assure you it is not just a Mississippi thing. It's any long drive over any long period of time, these broken down cars or pulled over cars or whatever. It's the object in the road in the summertime, if you're doing a lot of interstate driving, is more useful because apparently semis will have their tires pop and leave these car destroying pieces of rubber in the road that never get moved. Those are the things that the object in road stuff is a lot more useful than the broken down car.
It would be nice if there was, say, a list of options you could toggle on and off to have it only
just check those boxes.
Right. Have it only do audio alerts for specific things. So if you need it, like
if there's something in the road or if there's a cop, then
just
let
like
me
you
know.
Said, you know, if there was something that was really
the real problem is that you have this point system where people get more points for reporting things, so they report
and they spam the point system.
Yes, they what they ought to do is take away all points for reporting that, or make it like a single point or something where it's a fraction of a point, something stupid, so that people will report it. But it's not gonna, you're not gonna see every piece of junk on the side of the road get reported. That would be really nice.
You ever gotten a roadkill notice?
Well, there'll be people that there'll be a cop that's already pulled over. There'll be a cop that's already pulled over a someone, and they're not actually shooting radar or watching for bad drivers, and people report that as police, whereas they're not sitting, you know, they're literally standing outside the person's window writing a ticket. It's how are they going to watch you drive by?
To be fair, that could change on a moment's notice, so yeah, I'm fine with that. But no, I've never received a roadkill notice there, Jim. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, that's a thing.
I've seen that maybe once.
Also, more a predominantly Mississippi Mississippi sort of alert, I'm guessing.
Yeah, not exactly a city. You don't see that on the interstate in Dallas a lot, but yeah.
My biggest complaint with Waze is that in May of 2016 at Google I.O., Google announced that Waze was going to be integrated with Android Auto. And here we are, Google I.O., May 2017, already come and gone, not a peep. And it's still not in there, and it still hasn't happened. And I'm very, very disappointed. I would plug an Android phone into my car and leave it constantly just sitting there plugged into my system for long trips just for the Android Auto integration with Waze so that it was on my native display. Nary a peep. It's been a year. What's going on, Google? This is stupid. Well, we're closing in on the hour mark. I don't think there's anything else that I have to discuss. What about you guys?
Nope.
I have an appointment at the Knox Street Apple Store at 2:05 p.m.
I'm surprised they could see you today. Every time I try to make an Apple Store appointment on a weekend for any of the Apple Stores around here, it's usually 2 or 3 days waits on all of them.
Especially a holiday weekend at that.
Yes, especially. So count yourself. This is a sign.
If it's for iOS or phone, then yeah, it's usually. But for this is a Mac notebook. Yeah.
Brian's right. This is a sign you don't need to fix your own MacBook Pro.
The universe is telling you, Jim, this butterfly mechanism, not worth your trouble. Don't waste your holiday getting frustrated over a thing that you're not going to be able to make work right. If you only had to fix one key, maybe, but it's multiple keys, including a space bar.
Do I even mention the Sprite now? Of course, they probably got it in some computer that already brought it in and said that something was wrong with it. But
yeah, it's they're going to know anyway. It's not like you're going to get one past them. They're going to open it up and see that it's, you know, they're going to know something's in there. So it's not like this doesn't happen.
Sticky fructose goodness. Yep.
Oh, by the way, today is May 28th. Today is National Hamburger Day, so go have a hamburger. I don't care if you like beef or soy or whatever you like. Go have a hamburger.
That sounds like a good thing.
I'm there, Brad. I'm totally there. I'll find a burger before I come home. A Whataburger, maybe.
Go to Hop Dottie's. You're close by. There's two Hop Dottie's near you.
Oh, there's a Hop Dottie right down the road from that Apple Store, right there on McKinney.
Perfect.
Now. Yep.
Well, until next time, later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. You can find us on Twitter. The Twitter handle for the show is @infinloopback. That's @infinloopback. I am @BrianB. That's @BrianB. Jim is @BigJim. That's @BigJim. And Brad is @MeesterIdle. That's @MeesterIdle. Thanks for listening, and we hope to talk to you next time.